Former Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio and three other members of the far-right extremist group could face decades in prison. They've been found guilty of seditious conspiracy and other crimes for plotting to attack the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, part of an effort to keep Donald Trump in power after he lost the 2020 presidential election. So what impact, if any, will these convictions have on homegrown far-right extremism? We turn now to Cynthia Miller-Idris. She runs the Polarization and Extremism Research and Innovation Lab at American University. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the program. So what impact has this trial had on the Proud Boys?
It really hasn't had as much of an impact as you'd like to think. I mean, they have continued, they've really evolved. Their members are, you know, all across the country, and they're just now moving into other types of protests. So they've been protesting at children's reading, you know, drag reading and libraries, and protesting anti-racist education, and just kind of opportunistically jumping on other types of protests that are happening across the country.
And when you say protesting, often this can be violent.
Exactly. It's either violent or it carries the whiff of violence. And that's part of the impact they've had, is they have helped to normalize the idea of political violence. And we're seeing support for political violence, of course, rise in the mainstream as well.
So given what you've just described, these convictions, will they act as a warning, as a deterrent, not just for the Proud Boys, but other violent extremists, white nationalists, so-called patriotic militias across this country?
I think it's important to acknowledge that it's a good thing we got those convictions. It's a good day for democracy to see that happen, to have this really strong signal about these things being illegal and that there are consequences to it. But the vast majority of violence, including virtually every terrorist attack in the last 25 years coming from the far right, has not been from anyone affiliated with a group. So most of what we see in the violent actions are individuals who are radicalized online into toxic cultures. And this doesn't really affect that at all. And so I think we should be glad that we got the convictions, but we also shouldn't put too much hope in it. The genie's kind of out of the bottle right now, and we need a much deeper and earlier prevention effort if we're going to intervene in ways that prevent violence.
What would a deeper and earlier prevention system look like?
I mean, most other countries invest, you know, up to 95% of their counter-extremism resources in what we would call primary prevention. So digital media literacy, civic education, helping people recognize and reject propaganda and not be persuaded by it. We invest almost no resources in that and instead kind of focus on this security and carceral approach, but, you know, we're not going to ban or arrest our way out of the problems that we face. And I think we're seeing that with the exponential growth in hate crimes and other kinds of problems that we're facing. You can't just wait till something bad happens and then clean it up.
How would you describe the current state of violent extremism in the U.S.?
On every measure we have available, domestic violent extremism has been increasing, both on the hate-fueled violence side. We have record-breaking anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-Asian American and Pacific Islander hate, anti-LGBTQ hate. We have record, you know, growth in the support for political violence as well. So it's a crisis, and we need to see serious investment in the prevention model, not just in the security one.
Cynthia Miller-Idris runs the Polarization and Extremism Research and Innovation Lab at American University. Thank you.
Thank you.